Hey friends, welcome to the Grace Enough podcast. I am your host, Amber Cullum. Each episode, I sit down with a guest to discuss their life journey and how the grace of God has impacted them along the way. After listening to today's episode, I hope you are encouraged that God can use you right now in the midst of your day-to-day life. Yes, it requires daily surrender and trust, but we must remember His grace is enough. Have you ever thought good Christians don't fall apart? Have you ever thought, why do I feel this way? I know I'm free in Christ, but I am depressed. Maybe you have walked through some really hard stuff in your life. My guest today wrote all about the things I just mentioned in her book, Confessions of a Roadkill Christian. Today we sit down and have an honest and raw conversation about her and her husband's faith journey. This episode is not recommended for young children due to the nature of some topics covered. Listen to what Faith has to say about the pain in our stories.
As I wrote my story, I realized, you know, the details of our stories are different, but I think the pain of them is so often the same. Not everybody who reads my book is going to have experienced being in an interfaith marriage, but they know what it's like when their husband is going through a depressed season, or, you know, they have got their own broken places. And I think the hope is the same. God is a redeemer and He's a restorer and He loves healing the broken places of our lives.
Good morning, Faith. It's so great to have you here. I can't wait to sit and chat about your book, Confessions of a Roadkill Christian.
Hi, Amber. Thanks so much for having me.
Will you take a few moments and just introduce us to yourself, your family, and then we'll get into your story.
Okay, well, my name is Faith Rader. Like, for real, that is my name. My dad named me Faith, and I married Daniel Rader. It's not just a screen name. I live in Augusta, Georgia, and I am raising 6 kids, ages 17 to 3. I just wrote the book Confessions of a Roadkill Christian. It came out this September, and it's self-published on Amazon, and it's been quite a journey getting from here to there.
Yes, which we are going to talk about. Well, I'm going to start this morning by reading one of the quotes from your book early on that really struck me. And then we're going to talk about it a little bit. So you say in the beginning of your book, there was a woman at the front sharing her story about God had worked, or about how God had worked in her life. And she said, "Surrender to God and watch Him work His miracle in your life too." And in this moment, I cried out to God in my heart, "Where is my miracle? I have surrendered to You. I have surrendered everything to You. Everything You have asked me to lay down, I have laid it down. Every hope, every dream, every expectation. I have surrendered it all to You. So where is my miracle?" And in that moment, God spoke quietly, like a gentle whisper to my soul. "What if my miracle is You? What if my miracle is that You are filled with joy and peace in the middle of circumstances that have not changed, not even one bit?" Those words really pierced my soul. It put words to the thoughts that I had several years ago regarding a situation in my life. And so if I feel that way, I have no doubt there are lots of listeners who have experienced similar feelings. And so will you briefly share your story up until that point when God really spoke those quiet words to your heart?
Sure. So I married a man who was going to be a pastor, and I loved that about him. I loved that he knew who he was and he knew what he wanted to do with his life. And I loved that we were doing ministry together. We led some Sunday schools, classes, and some small groups, and it was something we did really well together. But then through a long series of disappointments, of church betrayal and hurt and spiritual attack, my husband just went into this season of doubt and questioning his faith at a very foundational level, and reading a lot of books about atheism. And he had deconverted. It was probably 5 years before that moment. And it had just been a really hard struggle for us. Looking back from where I am now, I think what he was going through was something that was really healthy. He was questioning his faith. He was asking really hard questions. And for him, completely walking away was what he needed to do. But I didn't know anybody who had been through that and come out on the other side. And I thought this was it. Like, that's it. Like, everything that you thought that you were going to be together as this ministry team is over. Mm-hmm. And he's now taking you on this path of not fitting in at church and feeling like you can't be yourself in your home. You can't raise your kids the way that you were planning on raising your kids. It was this whole, like, total identity makeover that I had not signed up for. And it was devastating.
We aren't so great in the church of just facing that stuff head on and embracing people who are on a non-typical path.
Well, I think that that's one of the things that I've learned along this journey is that this is a typical path. Everybody has moments where they question their faith or they go through a period of doubt. And I think inside of church, we have made a really small box for what is acceptable to do with that doubt. And if you can't stay inside that box, you have to get out.
So true.
And so as we've kind of gone full circle and Daniel has deconstructed his faith and I deconstructed my faith and we're in a season of reconstruction, I just see like there needs to be space in church where you can still be loved and still wrestle with, like, very honestly with your faith.
Absolutely. I think, too, it's one of those things where when you start really engaging your brain, it's almost impossible not to walk through all of the things you learned if you learned those things from the time you were growing up, because it's just so natural in us. And I'm not saying natural to reject Christ. That's not what I'm saying. I think it's natural to begin asking the questions of, is this the only way? Do I really believe that? Why do I believe that?
Right. Yes.
Well, so tell me, up to that point, you all had moved a couple of times and you got married around 17 and
yes.
You had several children. So,
yes.
You know, kind of add that part to the story because that certainly impacts the story.
Yes. Up until that point, at that moment, I was holding our fifth baby. I think my oldest was still in elementary school. So we had a lot of kids, like back to back to back. We moved around a bit. We had financial uncertainty. This was just after the recession. And we had moved to Augusta kind of to get away from that into an area with more security.
Yeah. Well, and I know in the book you speak quite a bit about this lie that you believed growing up, that real Christians, that good Christians don't fall apart. And I think that is we're kind of talking about that already, but there's such a prevalence, I think, of that. And I'm seeing that in my young people and kind of being a little bit more careful in what I teach them, but realizing that it's still very prevalent in maybe our church culture, our school culture. Mm-hmm. And so talk a little bit about those feelings and how you grew up that way and kind of when that lie was exposed.
So I grew up in a very fundamentalist, conservative Christian community. And within that community, we didn't talk about mental health. That was not a thing in the 90s mm-hmm. that we talked about. If you suffered from depression, it was because it was a you and God thing, not a you and God and your doctor and your therapist kind of thing. And like I mentioned in my book, I felt like there were these levels of Christians that I saw. There were the really good Christians who were steady and faithful and like they never made mistakes or messed up. And then there was kind of the other people who couldn't get their act together, who were just kind of like, eh, you know, like they're here, And I guess they have to be here. They're not like really good Christians. And if they could just get their act together and try as hard as we are, they would be fine. And as I was walking through a period in my life where I just could not hold it together, and I was recognizing that so much of the we've got it together was just a facade. It was just like a front that we were showing to other people. We weren't letting anybody see the mess that was really going on at home. And we were just doing the right things, kind of forcing it, like just because we have to maintain our status in our community. Yeah, I went through a season after, especially after Daniel walked away from church, where I just could not keep it together. I couldn't make it to church by myself with my kids every Sunday. I definitely could not serve or volunteer or be like this productive member of my community. I was falling apart. And I think I expected to be judged both by the community that I was in and like by God. Like, oh, if you just had enough faith, you wouldn't be experiencing that. But instead, I was met with so much tenderness and grace and compassion and love. And I discovered in this place that God loved me so tenderly, even though I was making bad choices, even though I definitely, my faith was not strong. God's orientation to me was like facing me like a tender father with love and compassion. And he definitely didn't turn his back on me, even though he was quiet way more than I wanted him to be in that season.
It's interesting because in church culture, sometimes we even put false expectations on others. I have learned that as well, that we just assume they're going to respond to us in a certain way, when sometimes if we would just put it out there, people may not know what to do with it, but there are people who will respond in a tender and loving way, just as, God would respond. And we read through God's word, and it's like story after story after story of people struggling
Oh, yeah.
and sinning, and God just saying, yeah, you may suffer these consequences, but I still love you, and I'm going to give you a chance after chance after chance to come back to me. That's what I want.
Yeah, and sometimes we tell the stories in the Bible through such a filter. And if we just look at them as regular people, pretty much everybody in the Bible majorly blew it at some point. It's not a bunch of pristine stories of people who made wonderful choices and were always doing what God wanted them to do. It's like Jonah and the whale, and it's David and Bathsheba, and it's Abraham and lying about Sarah. We have a book of stories of people who are so messed up, and yet we tell the story to ourselves as though the bad stuff never happened, and we set ourselves up for disappointment. I think our expectations are wrong. And
I know, and I've started reading the Bible much more through a lens of, okay, the only perfect person here is Christ.
yeah.
And every single human being since the Bible has been, inspired by God is still a part of the story. And our stories really are no different.
Yeah.
We people who have been saved by Jesus and love Jesus are still on this journey to glorify God, but we screw up and our story could be written. And that's something that I really absolutely love about the book you've written and would highly recommend it, is because it's this beautiful story of the redeeming grace of God in some really hard, ugly, painful, broken places. And
Yeah.
that really is a story that a lot of people could write. It may look different,
Yeah.
but it is a story, and God can redeem any story.
That is so true. And as I wrote my story, I realized, the details of our stories are different, but I think the pain of them is so often the same. Not everybody who reads my book is going to have experienced being in an interfaith marriage, but they know what it's like when their husband is going through a depressed season, or they have got their own broken places. And I think the hope is the same. God is a redeemer and he's a restorer and he loves healing the broken places of our lives.
Yeah, and he wants all of it and he can handle all of it too.
He sure can.
Amen, sister. He can handle it, I promise. You know?
And I'd say too, I think it might be a little hard to, it was very hard for me to communicate the length of time through which my story took place. Like, it took 10 years from the time that my husband walked away from God to when he started walking back towards God. And that was a really long, hard period where I was believing that God loved my husband. But I didn't know if my husband could ever receive that love. I had to really get into a space of whatever happens, God has got me and he is going to take care of me. And I can't put all my hope in Daniel coming back to God in order to for our family to be happy. In order for me to love him, I have to love him right where he's at. And I have to believe that God loves my husband. And what I'm trying to say in this is that a lot of times we're believing for things that are humanly impossible. Like what we see in front of our eyes is that this is the last, least most likely thing that could possibly happen. And God can do anything. He really can.
And sometimes it's all about the waiting. Yeah. Let's talk about what went on a little bit. Some of the more details during that 10 years. I think the listener could think, okay, this is really hard, but there was a lot of stuff going on beyond that. Let's chat a little bit about depression. That is something that you and I share, something that I haven't spoken a lot about in groups of people because it can be so private, but praise God, it's becoming something that people are talking about more and more because it's real. And I know that you had a little bit more of a rare form of depression early on because it was during pregnancy.
Yes.
And then experienced it post a couple of pregnancies. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yes. I'm really, really thankful that I had read about antenatal depression, which is depression during your last trimester of pregnancy. And it's just your hormones are crazy. And I was very depressed. With my second pregnancy, I was thinking every time I went out of my house that I just wanted to die. Like I wanted to run my car off the side of the road. And it was a really huge struggle because I didn't know what to do with this. I didn't have any vocabulary or support system to help me. Like I knew what was going on. Thankfully, I wasn't completely blindsided. I knew I had antenatal depression, but it just felt so unfair. It felt like you're supposed to be happy. You're about to have a baby. And here I am wanting to die. And it felt like I was being robbed. And I feel like that often when I struggle with depression, if I'm struggling with depression around the holidays, and I'm like, oh, this is supposed to be a happy time. Why am I so numb? And I think from my first experience with depression to now, I've learned to like to speak up, to tell people around me, I'm struggling. I'm afraid it's going to get worse again. To have a support system has been really helpful.
Yeah, I agree with that because it seems like when I went through a similar situation, but post-pregnancy, there was this feeling of, oh, I should just be able to pull myself up by my bootstraps and move on. What is wrong with me?
Yeah.
And nobody else was even saying that to me because I hadn't even told anybody.
Right.
Even now, though, when I am in a certain space and I look at my husband, he's had to learn you don't just pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Like something is going on and there's not a clear thinking process in your brain. Even though I could tell myself, God loves me. I know he's here with me. That would be true in my heart 1 second. But the next second would be, I don't really even care if I see any of these people anymore or if I wake up tomorrow. And it's a really weird feeling that is indescribable. And if you've not experienced it, it can really feel like it's the other person's problem.
For sure. I think when I was young, I thought that depression was like, I think I said this earlier, it was about me and God. Like, I just needed to believe the right things about God and get my head straight, then I wouldn't struggle. But there's so many more factors. One time, I remember I was just like dusting my living room. All of a sudden, I was overwhelmed with sadness. And I sat down and I started praying. I was like, God, what do I have to be sad about? Please, like, reveal this to me. And it was like nothing. I did not have anything to be sad about. And I was like, what's wrong? I can't figure out what's wrong. And later I realized sometimes our bodies just do this to us. Like, our hormones are weird, and it's not about what I'm thinking or what I'm believing, or sometimes it's not even about what I'm doing. It's just that my hormones have gotten off, and this is something I've got to ride through. That released some of the, oh, like, it's not my fault. I didn't do something wrong. I'm not believing something wrong about God. It's just, I just suffered from depression. And sometimes I have bad days. Sometimes I have bad, like, a bad series of days or weeks or months where things are just foggy and numb and hard. And it's not necessarily because I'm doing something wrong.
Absolutely.
And once I realized that, it helped me get through it a lot faster.
Yeah, and just setting your thoughts slowly on something else and realizing that it is a process of, okay, this is not going to last forever. But for me, if I stay, it was continuing for a long time. And finally, when I let go and said, okay, I'm willing to see someone, I'm willing to receive medication if that's what's needed, it was so hard on my pride, just like you said, feeling like something was wrong with my relationship with God, but also crying out to him and saying, God, you know my heart.
Like,
Jesus, you know that I love you. I mean, I really do. But this is not changing.
Yeah. And I was very content with my circumstances. I could look at what was going on around me and saying, I have no reason to be sad. And yet every day I feel like my blood is lead. And what am I going to do with this? One thing that has helped me a lot is verbalizing what's going on inside of my head. Because once I get out of that darkness, like, I think about the thoughts in my head as being like in a closet. And once I open the doors and let the light in and kind of let them out, they lose a lot of their power. And that's helped me.
Well, and that is the place where I feel like our flesh and our enemy does hold us captive. And so I just want to be clear to our listeners, Faith and I, either one, are saying that we don't need to rely on God to get through depression, because I totally do know that my faith has completely changed the way I deal with it. But it was a process. And like you said earlier, counseling has helped me. Medication has helped me. But like you said, verbalizing those thoughts to God and to someone else in my life has helped me. And I think one of the biggest things I learned is that God is still present in all of it. And he's not leaving my side just because I'm struggling with depression and I'm not getting an answer. And you got to kind of lay down some of your fears and pride about what other people think about you and take the next step.
Yeah. And find those people who understand. I think I knew we were going to talk about this. I was thinking, like, what is one thing that's really been important? And that has been to not have just one person that I talk to about this, even if that one person is a therapist or a doctor or your husband. You can't just have one person that you lean on during a season of depression. You have to have a community of people who you can be open with, who kind of get it. And not all of my good friends get it. There are people who I ask to watch my kids and we love to hang out, and but I don't talk to them about depression.
Yeah.
But I have other people who all I have to do is text them and say, I'm having a bad morning. And they know, like, they totally get it. They tell me I'm praying for you. And that has meant a world of difference to me.
Absolutely. Well, something else that went on during that time was your brother committed suicide. And we don't have to go into a ton of details with that because that may still be something really sensitive. But share a little bit about that season. And, you know, this was during the time when your husband had really deconverted. And I don't know, were you on child three or four and maybe even out in Montana at this point with no family? I don't remember all the details, but share that, the dynamic of that.
Yeah. So we weren't all the way out in Montana. We were, but we had just moved an hour away. All of my family lives pretty close to each other. And we had just moved an hour away. And my husband had just deconverted. And we had had child number four. And I had gone through postpartum depression with him. And then my brother, who had struggled a lot as a teenager, but who I thought he had turned a corner. I thought I could stop being worried about him now. Like, he looked like he was going somewhere productive again. And one night we just get a call that he'd committed suicide. It was just devastating. I thought that I was getting my feet underneath me again. Finally, okay, I can do this again. And my brother committed suicide. And it was like, no, like, I'm drowning again. It was such a hard thing to grieve. It's still such a hard thing to grieve his loss.
Have you encountered ways and communities that you feel like have been a good support? Because this is something that's become so prevalent in our culture and people are finally talking about it and hopefully being more educated on just what really triggers that in people sometimes. Is there anything that you feel like was really supportive of you and your family when you were walking through this?
At that time, no.
Yeah.
Like, at that time, I felt like I was walking alone. Even, like, my siblings and I couldn't support each other. Mm-hmm. Like, and we couldn't bear the weight together. And I couldn't, like, talk to my husband about it because we were coming at it from such a different place. I just felt completely alone grieving the suicide, except that God was really with me.
Yeah. I was going to say, what was it like? I mean, just on your face every day before him?
It was a lot of crying in the shower because that was the only space where I could get away from my kids. It was a lot of crying in the shower. I did not have an answer. Everything God works all things for good. Like, how could a death be good? How could my baby brother's taking his life be good? I really, really struggled with stuff like that. Like, all the cliche sort of things that some of my family were saying. I was like, how? I cannot fathom how God could be good and sovereign and loving and my baby brother died. And I started opening my eyes, like, it's not just one child. It's not just my brother. It's other people's brothers. It was other people's dads. It was other people's moms. And I was just overwhelmed with the grief we sort of share as humanity, all this hard stuff that we have to bear.
Well, and I think the reality of that, too, is when you're in it, so many of us have, we just feel like we need to say something to make you feel better, to bring relief. And so often, like my friend Cindy says, we just have to sit in the pain and let God love us right there. And it's like, you and I both love the book, Shannon Martin's, you know, The Ministry of Ordinary Places. And something that she says in there, I just cannot get it out of my mind. She's talking about the abundant life. And she's like, but the abundant life includes the sweet and the salty. And how does that play out? This, you know, abundant doesn't just mean all good and pure things. It means the salty, the hard, the all of it. And I can't say that I've come to a great conclusion with that, but you, I don't know if you feel the same. I still believe that God is good and that he can do it.
I would say one of the good things that came out of that for me was I knew what it felt like to grieve a suicide. And I knew that I was never going to put my family through that because of me. So as I walked through seasons of pretty severe depression, I knew, like, this was not the answer. I knew that I could not take my life. That was not an option. And I was very open with my kids. We talk about my brother pretty regularly. We always have like a zero tolerance policy for saying stuff like, I want to die, when we're just saying like, oh, I'm disappointed, or, you know, like, we have a lot of jokes in our culture that are just totally inappropriate. It kind of wears down the shock value of like,
Yes.
no, life is precious. Your life is precious. Grieving a suicide is a horrible thing to put your family through.
So let's go on into the writing of this book. We talked a little bit before we started. Maybe we'll get off a little bit of the heavier topics, and but we could chat forever, I think, because this is a great conversation. But talk to us about how, you know, this started stirring in your spirit.
So I have been a writer since I could hold a pencil. I had cute little Hello Kitty notebooks full of really awful poetry.
Yes.
Expressing my feelings. And I wrote short stories I never finished. So I've been a writer my whole life. I think that that's who God made me to be. And through my adult life, I've had different blogs. But I went through a season where I was just really banging on the door of writing a book. And I was asking God, why hasn't this door opened yet? I had to have a lot of conversations with God about identity and why did I want to write a book? Was I wanting to secure my position, or was it to validate my worth, or was it as an overflow of who God had made me to be? And that was a really big turning point for me, that I saw the importance of my life, where I was with my family, loving them well, as valuable. And then I sort of the door opened to write the book, and God was like, okay, now it's time. You can write this. And also, I sort of released the expectation of writing the next number one book that everyone would just love and adore. And everyone would say, oh, Faith is the best writer we've ever seen, but just that it could be something small and still be valuable. And that really took the pressure off.
A lot of people would say I'm a huge reader. I would say maybe not, but I do enjoy a good story about people's lives and the redemptive quality at the end. I don't know. That's my type of reading. And that's what I absolutely loved about this book. And I love to hear you say you've been a writer from birth, because in our culture today, it feels like everybody's publishing a book.
Yes.
And you know what? I don't have a problem with that, because I feel like people's stories should be heard, but I know that can be intimidating, because even launching this podcast, I had to face that fear of, why am I doing this? Am I doing this because everyone else is doing it? Or am I doing this, you know, because this is something God's put in my heart? What are the reasons? And yeah, it is very obvious in your writing that you are a writer. It is beautifully written, but the story just, oh my gosh, I don't know. It's so impactful. And so how did you go about, I mean, you self-published this book, not an easy task. I think nowadays books get published so easy. That tell us about that process and about promoting it and how that's been.
It is so easy to publish a book right now. Anybody with Word on their computer can publish a book. I think God just put the right people in my path so that I knew how easy it could be. There is a Facebook group called Self-Publishing Support. If you go there, everybody's asking the same questions, like, well, how do I do this? And the answer is just very simple. Just write it and edit it, and you can put it right onto Kindle, like Kindle Direct Publishing. They will print on demand copies of your book. So I did not put money into this. It didn't take fundraising thousands of dollars to print thousands of copies. You can just load it onto Kindle Direct Publishing and they take care of it for you. And it's a really great place if you're just starting out and you have maybe a collection of blog posts that you'd like to be able to hold in your hands as a book. They make it really, really easy. So I've just sort of taken this very slowly, one step at a time. I've only had one book event so far. I haven't done a lot of promotion.
Oh, well, I want to promote it for you because it is so great. And where is it available?
It's available on Amazon. So if you've got Amazon Prime, you can just click it over into your cart and have it come with the rest of the stuff that you get.
Yeah, so you can have the paperback book and you can also have it on your Kindle. Well, before we close out, I want to talk a little bit about shame in the church. I know that's switching back to a serious topic, but I think it's really, really important because that's such a big part of your story. And again, you write about it so beautifully in the book. Tell me your feelings on that. Share a little bit about, you know, what you shared in the book.
I think the church often uses shame for power. That this is how we keep people in line, or we accept that ourselves and we shame ourselves because we're trying so hard to stay in line. Like we want to keep everything together and we will shame ourselves into trying to do that. And I just think it doesn't work. Shame doesn't change people and it doesn't work to change myself. Love has been such a more powerful instrument of change. If you want someone, like even just my children, if I want my children to listen to me, I love them instead of like always shaming them. And for myself, with some of the things that I've struggled with, I've felt enormous shame over them. Mm-hmm. I share in my book that I struggled really hard for a really long time with having a crush. And I was so ashamed of that. And I just wanted it to stop. And I thought that shaming myself would get myself to stop. And it didn't work. And when I allowed God to meet me in that place of hurt and brokenness, he brought love into it and helped me to see myself in a different way and started healing that place in my heart. I just think that when we let God love us in the places where we feel the most shame, we just find so much redemption mm-hmm. and so much power to follow God. And, you know, it's really beautiful.
Yeah. And helping people identify shame, because shame is certainly a tool of the enemy. It is a tool of the flesh. I catch myself shaming my children to try to make them do what I want them to do. And I have to stop mm-hmm. myself and say, you know what? Mama is wrong in this. And I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because you're right. It's so unhealthy. And I know it's a tool of the enemy because it is so rampant in our culture. And particularly it can be in Christian spaces because we feel so guilty about not doing everything right. When God is not, I'm not asking you to do everything right. I'm asking you to come to me.
Yes. Yes.
Well, where are you and Daniel in the faith journey now? I know yes. there's got to be people out here wondering, like, wait a minute, don't leave us hanging.
Yes. We're in a much, much better place. I wouldn't say we're on this in the same place in every way, but we're going to church together now. Daniel has been listening to a lot of podcasts, like the Liturgist's podcast is one of his favorite. We listen to a lot of Rob Bell together, and I don't agree with him all the time, but he has really interesting perspective mm-hmm. on things, and we've had really good conversations around that. So, yeah, I'd say he's definitely on a journey where he's more open to God, and he's open to a God who loves him. Mm. And that is really, really beautiful, because I think before, like, we were both practicing such a religion of shame and of keeping it all together and of believing all the right things. That was very important to us. And now we're both on a journey and we're both in process and we're both seeking God, and we're not in the same place. But we can talk about God again. And that is just wonderful.
Yeah. And I think that's the most beautiful thing, because it's that acknowledgement that, number one, God can handle it. Number two, God is not going to just say, well, you've changed your mind on some things and I don't want anything to do with you. And number three, his grace becomes so evident when you just slow down and remember that you see that you don't have to know it all, believe it all, and agree with it all to be loved right now.
That is putting it very well. And it's also opened my eyes to, I think, a reality that in life we're constantly deconstructing and reconstructing. And having that vocabulary has helped me a lot, just kind of look. And I think when we're in a season of questioning, some people lean towards certainty. Like, I'm just going to lean into my certainty. And some people lean into doubt. And I think we need to have more compassion, especially for people who are leaning into doubt, that we all go through seasons of deconstruction and reconstruction. And when we can give people grace and space to be on a journey and trust that God is going to bring them around when they're ready and just love them right where they are, mm-hmm. like, that is a beautiful thing.
Well, it's time to close up, and I usually ask a couple of final questions of all of our guests, but I'm just going to ask one since we've had such a great conversation. We've been here for a while. I love it. With all that we've talked about, if you were able to sit down with your great-grandchildren and offer them some wisdom just about life, what's something you'd like to share with them?
I think if I was sitting across the table from my great-grandchildren, I would say just love. Whatever is happening, love is always the best choice. Even if you have the right to be angry or you have the right to be hurt or defensive, love wins and love works. And every time, if you choose love, you will never regret it.
That's a good word. Well, Faith, tell us, we know we can find your book on Amazon. Where can we find you?
I'm at www.faithrader.com, and all the links to my social media are there. I'm pretty much on Instagram the most. I post there almost every day.
Well, and I will share all of those things in the show notes. So you can also always go over to Grace Enough Podcast and find those things if you have any questions. Thank you so much for being here today. This has been quite a joy and good for my soul.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are a first-time listener, welcome. Be sure to visit the archives to listen to previous episodes featuring women who are impacting God's kingdom by taking small steps of faith in their day-to-day lives. And if you are a regular listener of the show, thank you for tuning in week in and week out. Be sure to check out the show notes for links and resources at graceenoughpodcast.com. Also, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play and click the subscribe button. Clicking that button helps to make sure you never miss a new episode of the podcast. If you share the show on social media, use the hashtag GraceEnoughPodcast or tag me at GraceEnoughPodcast_Amber on Instagram and Facebook.
Thank you for listening to the Grace Enough Podcast. Tune in.